Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to CoHealth Checkup, a 30-minute radio show that promises thoughtful debate and lively banter about workplace wellness and employee benefits trends. I'm Fran Melmed, the founder of Context, a communication consulting firm that specializes in workplace wellness, and one of your co-hosts. You can find me on Twitter at F.E. Melmed, and I'm online at contextcommunication.com. I'm joined today by my co-host, Carol Harnett.
Hi, Fran. As Fran indicated, I'm Carol Harnett, and I am a health, disability, and employee benefits consultant, speaker, and writer. I'm also the president of the Council for Disability Awareness. You can find me at the Twitter handle, at Carol Harnett, and also at Human Resource Executive, where I write the employee benefits column.
Great. So as our regular listeners know, Carol and I have been covering the topic of financial health recently. In our first show on the topic, we spoke with Lori Rowley, the co-founder and president of the National Association of Retirement Plan Participants. In our second show, we spoke with Doug Hirsch from GoodRx about prescription cost management. Today, we'll be speaking with Jim Marks from Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. And the topic today is of the social determinants for health, of health. For those unfamiliar with the term, the social determinants of health are those factors that affect our ability to afford safe housing, to access healthcare services, to secure educational and job opportunities. They also include our sense of public safety, our exposure to discrimination, and our sense of inclusion. We like to say that it's everything about where we work, live, play, and pray. To the CDC, social determinants boil down to, and I'll quote from them, the economic and social conditions that influence the health of people and communities. So what is the employer's role in addressing these factors? What can employers gain by doing so? To address these and more questions, we've invited Jim to join us. Jim is the Executive Vice President with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, where he oversees all program communications, research, and policy activities in support of the Foundation's vision to build a culture of health in America. And previously, Jim served as Assistant Surgeon General and Director of the Centers for Disease Control's National Center for Chronic Disease Prevention and Health Promotion. Jim, I want to welcome you to CoHealth Checkup.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here, Fran.
Great. I'm going to dive right in to backing up, really. In my intro, I gave a fairly brief and a really basic definition for social determinants of health. For our listeners and for us, can you elaborate on that definition and give examples of how they affect or exist in the workplace?
Sure. You framed it nicely in that when you talk with people and they think about where they live and the safety of that neighborhood or whether there's any problems with environmental contaminants around them or in their workplace, safety or injury risks or where they play or in their housing and there might be mold or things like that, all of those things everybody gets really affects their health. Well, it turns out that when we talk about the social determinants, it is really about those things. It's access to food. It's about the quality of housing. And then it's about the kind of circumstances people can live in. Everybody, when you make it concrete like that, they recognize how important those are for their health. Health doesn't just start at the doctor's office, start or end at the doctor's office. It starts, it's nurtured, it's protected and preserved, first in our families and how we operate as a family, in our neighborhood schools, and, of course, in our workplaces. So that's why we think it is so important to pay attention to those areas. It turns out, in fact, in all of the studies, that those things that are outside medical care turn out to be more important for our health, our safety, and our length of life than those even within medical care.
That's a great summary, Jim, and really appreciate it. And one of the things Fran and I have noted in our career so far is that U.S. employers really haven't demonstrated much interest in these social determinants of health. They feel, you know, as though certainly safety in the work in the workplace is something they're responsible for, but I think they've really struggled with issues outside the workplace. We've often heard it's not their responsibility and they're trying to be less paternalistic. But we have certainly seen some exceptions, and people who've listened to the show regularly know that we've had folks on from the Blue Zones Project, and employers are absolutely included in that initiative to create healthy cities and states. So can you start to speculate on why you believe employers rarely want to address these determinants?
I think your framing of what things were like in the past is spot on. But I think what we're seeing is the businesses, especially those that are looking towards the future, are seeing this as something they need to take more seriously, but they're still trying to learn how. And so the first reason, as you would expect, is that this is good for business. You outlined some of it with the framing of worksite wellness. They see that as improving the productivity and the health of their employees, so that's a good investment for business overall. Well, just as it's a good investment for business for the people they've already hired, it is also good for business when they are located in a community, that the people that they'll hire, that the families of their employees are healthier. And in fact, it turns out that we're seeing mayors pick up on this just as the leading businesses are. That is that a business that's in a community that is a great place to raise a family because it's safe, because it's got good parks and sidewalks, because there's access to healthy foods, all of that makes it easier to attract the kind of employees that companies want, and it makes it easier for mayors, city leadership, to attract the kind of businesses that they want in their community. So these are really joined at the hip. That is, what's happening out in the community and the health of employees and the interests of business. That's something business is seeing more and more as their classic health care costs that they've had to deal with have gone up and up and up.
You know, when I woke up this morning, one of the things that occurred to me that came to my mind or memory was the GI Bill, both 1944 and then later on in Korea, Vietnam, that had a practical exchange with individuals where you come and basically essentially work for us, and then when you come home, we will help you with educational pursuits. We will help you with home ownership. Some of the things that we're talking about here about advancing people into neighborhoods and into jobs where they can thrive more. Do you see examples today where we have that kind of exchange more actively, and can you identify some of those?
So I probably could think of it in a couple of ways. First of all, let's be real clear. You chose a great example because education is really considered one of the core social determinants of health. People that have more education live longer. In fact, a person with an out of high school diploma can expect to die about 9 years sooner than a college graduate. That is a huge difference. There are classic reasons for that. If you've got a better education, you will earn more. You'd be better able to afford health insurance, better able to afford good quality food, to live in a neighborhood that's safer. And in addition, because of your success in school, you often have the sense that what you do can affect the quality of your life. You're more apt to make changes that will help your health and well-being and that of your family. So the notion of that kind of investment that you described with the GI Bill is also a health investment, is something increasingly, I think, policymakers are becoming aware of. Now, in the business community, of course, they tended always to be concerned about the education of the workforce they wanted to hire, and were they going to a community where there were enough well-educated workers that were there for them to hire. They may not have been thinking about would they also be healthier and more productive, but now they're starting to see that. And as I mentioned, we're seeing mayors so pick up on this. And I'll give you an example. Mayor Mick Cornett in Oklahoma City, their city, he felt, was at risk of becoming, like others, a a hollowed-out city, the suburbs doing well. And he took on the issue of getting his city to lose weight and become more active. And it really turned them around. They, in aggregate, estimate they lost about 1 million pounds. At the same time, I had dinner with some of the leading business leaders, and they said, we were losing out to some of the top people we wanted to recruit to Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City lost a business that wouldn't move there, went to another city. And they said, we need a better Oklahoma City. That turned out to be investments in schools and in parks as the way they got it started to make it a great place to raise a family. Businesses have, especially those that depended on long-term employees, employees that were well-educated, have often invested in tuition reimbursement and things like that. So they knew it for classic productivity. Now they can see that potentially is helping them with their health care costs as well, or at least paying attention to where they're located, whether that's something good that they can help in their community.
You know, Jim, as you were speaking, tuition reimbursement immediately came to mind for me because one of the disturbing trends, I have to track employee benefits as part of my role as a columnist in that area, and that's one of the benefits we see dropping off the most. You've actually inspired me, and I want to call out to our listeners that this could be an important topic for companies to revisit under the onus of health. Because I think people have lost sight of that benefit that comes from tuition reimbursement plans.
What's been fascinating to me is it feels like it's been a slow erosion of the ability of businesses to invest in their employees, and health care costs are right at the center of that. So the estimates are, as you and your listeners probably know, about 50% of company profits go to health care costs. We have added $1 trillion in our health care costs as a nation over the last decade alone. And that means other things get squeezed, other things that are important and valuable for a company. And that's why, as we think about where companies can get benefit, it is in fact by the healthiness of the community in which they're located, so that they will be find it easier to find and hire people that are healthier than they would have been if they'd been in another place. That is like getting a discount on your health care costs if you have a healthier workforce, a discount that might start right from the beginning. And your best chance of that is being in a community that is healthier in its employees or in its citizens, healthier in what its policies are, and in what it invests in, like parks and things like that.
Yeah, thankfully, one of the ways we are seeing companies continue to invest and even expand their benefits are around family-friendly policies. There seems to have been a recent surge in that general direction with Chipotle offering sick days to hourly workers, with the movement toward higher wages. Virgin and Facebook have improved their parental leave policies recently. And so it's interesting to see where some places are being constricted, what Carol alluded to and you spoke to about the tuition reimbursement, where people may not be making the connection to health, to others where they do see the connection to health, attraction, retention, particularly of women, and stress management.
All of those things are true, and I think that that's the key point. These are benefits. These are benefits that accrue to the employees, but they also accrue to the companies in just the ways that you mentioned. We all know times when our children were ill that stressed us out. And if we were able to stay home with them, then we would be less worried. And when we came in to work, be better able to focus. The idea that keeps a good employee there, we know the costs of recruiting and training new employees, all of those things have benefits for the company. So it's the costs that they can easily see they can also see are offset by the benefits they receive as a company. And so I think that what you're starting to see with the costs of health care and the benefits, people are getting more sophisticated about it. And so earlier you said that U.S. companies seem to be paying less attention to it. I think they're starting to pay more attention to it now as the costs of classic medical care and its associated issues have gone up, meaning the loss of productivity, et cetera. Those costs have gone up. We're seeing businesses, especially those that are forward-thinking, recognize that they've got levers that help them as well.
You know, Jim, a question just came to mind as you were talking that I didn't actually think to bring up into this dialogue, which is the concept of remote. And I want to address a question to you in two ways. One is we certainly see a trend with employers accepting the idea of having remote workers, and in fact, remote workers that might live in a completely different place than the corporation functions. And so I think, you know, a challenge for employers in those types of settings are that they maybe get the kind of workers they want, but they really lose a lot of influence over the community where their remote worker lives, works, plays, and prays. And that's part one. And then part two, the other trend we're seeing in remote, both from the employer and also the medical insurers, they often form a relationship with, which is the idea of telehealth and people seeing their physicians virtually, or seeing at least a physician virtually in an emergent situation of some kind, one that might have driven them to at least a walk-in clinic center. And in some ways, to me, that feels like if you're in a medical desert, that you would get access to better care. So how do you think about these two concepts of remote when you think of these social determinants?
Boy, that's a great question. There are a couple of points there. Usually the companies that are expecting or having remote employees, they really want those employees because they're specially gifted or have real skills that are hard to come by. So they know that it's a compromise, but they get the kind of employee that they want. They give up, you're right, much more about sort of control of the workplace and the healthiness of that than they would have when the person is physically there. But they can still pay attention to the quality of the community or recognize that we're all in this together. That is, as a nation, if we don't get our healthcare costs in line, we will lose our competitiveness internationally. That's something we are starting to see, so that they, with their colleagues in other communities, if they've got sites there or their competitors in those communities, recognize that being in a blue zone, as you said that you talked about before, one of the really healthier places or the places that are working hard to become healthier as a community is a benefit for them, for remote employees, and for our nation as a whole. The telehealth is more about health care. We're seeing some prominent work there, especially on quality of care for individuals and often primary care doctors that are distant from a tertiary center, that they can get consultations that way. We all know the extra costs of emergency room visits versus routine care. That's obviously heavily around the issues of primary care. But in tying back to our social factors and health, in some places they're seeing that the, for example, mold and dust in substandard housing can trigger asthma attacks. And often those families will take their children often to an emergency room in the evening or have the when they have a suffering a child. In at least one community where I've seen a report, the businesses coalition with the health players took this on to reduce in-home triggers of asthma attacks and saw ER visits drop by almost 90%. That's huge. Hmm. And that means both that the parents don't have to stay home, the kids don't lose school, and their health care costs go. In fact, we're now starting to see some communities think about this where they could attract private investment to make a profit because they think they can project large enough health care savings with the improvements and the refurbishing of old-style housing and apartments. So that's the kind of thing where bankers and others are looking at this, but it can be a very powerful lever. Things that are outside the workplace, greatly affecting health care costs, and the business coalitions, the business roundtables, the chambers of commerce are getting behind this in some of the more forward-thinking communities.
Right. The idea is thinking about not only what happens in the workplace, but what happens before you get to it and afterward, because that's a huge chunk of the employee's time and what affects them, but also who they're with and how that relates
right.
to their own behavior, but the behavior that affects, obvious, going back to the healthcare budget, we know dependents are a large part of that equation.
That's right. Obviously, this is not something business needs to do on its own. This is not something business has to say is our sole responsibility. They have a role to play. They're an anchor institution in a community, often a major one, and certainly in aggregate they are. But it can't be done by government alone either, and it can't be done by schools alone either. This is people working together to improve their community and the health of their people.
So I was going to ask about precarious employment and its impact, but I want to follow the thread that you just laid out, because it talks about influence and employers' influence and leverage in something that they have a great amount of investment in. Are there examples of companies that you see using their leverage to impact community, to impact policy, that you see are as shining lights of what employers could do to improve matters about where you live, work, play, and pray that affect health?
Sure. And actually, it's a great question, because just in the last couple of years, we've been looking for communities like that we could make what they're doing more visible. Let me give you an example, and it's one that I think ties together the threads of this conversation. Spokane, Washington. It had a failing public education system with a very low graduation rate, below 60%. The business community there, the Chamber of Commerce and leading businesses, recognized that they could not continue to do well without an educated community. They started to work with the school system to see if they could turn this around, applying some of the sort of classic business ways of looking for quality defects early on and correcting it. And they have, in just a few years, changed that graduation rate from below 60% to over 80%. Now, they won one of our prizes. A couple of points there. The role of the business community with the school, crucial. Both of them needed to be at the table and working together. The other is as I said, education and poor jobs and poor health go together. And so while we might not have in the past thought of this as a health intervention, in fact it is. Education and health are knit together everywhere. So this is a great example, and we're seeing other places like that, somewhat different, maybe not on graduation rates, but that's what we're starting to look for, and look for the communities that are where their leadership is coming together. They're dealing with the big problems in their communities. No serious health problem or other problem can be solved by health alone, by the business community alone, or by government alone. And so they're going to have to work together. We're going to have to work together as a nation. And that's one of the reasons why in our thinking of what we can do as a foundation, we've really started to embrace this broad view of where health comes from, how it gets protected and preserved, and what that means for the leadership in communities working together. The culture of health, as you will.
Yeah, you know, Jim, you have brought up, I think, an array of considerations that our listeners probably haven't considered ever or for a really long time. And so often what Fran and I like to do is to synthesize almost a list of first steps. If what you have said has intrigued our listeners, and it certainly, I know, it's intrigued me, and I'm sure it's intrigued Fran, I mean, you've talked about education and schools, things that I'm positive people haven't thought about for a while, a little bit about tuition reimbursement. We've mentioned things like the increased wage movement and improved parental leave, and people who listen to our show have also heard us talk about the food deserts and solving that or beginning to solve that with locally grown food on rooftops and access to community-supported architecture. So when you think about what you're trying to achieve and what you think is best for the nation and best for business, is there a first, like, baby steps that employers that are new to this can think about starting with to get the greatest impact for their employees and their communities, and let's face it, also for their businesses?
So there are baby steps, and some of that, I'm sure almost all of them have started. They maybe haven't taken it further. So they probably are engaged with the governmental sector in some way, whether it's through the chamber or directly. They're probably engaged with the hospital or health system as a provider for their employees or as a leader and a core employer in their communities. All of those groups have to work together to say, what does a community need for health, a community health improvement plan? A corporation can look and say, what are there things that we could contribute to here, either because of their core business, because of the types of employees they have, or as they want to show that they are good corporate citizens that that are concerned about their community. That's a start, and it's building those relationships and making it clear that they are there as a part of that community for the long run. And then, so that'd be the way that I would state it. I could give you concrete examples, but I think it's better, you said baby steps, and I wanted to give you that. But there are also, we're seeing companies make these kinds of commitments that are long-term and in some instances quite substantial. For example, Campbell Soup is in Camden, New Jersey, not far from our headquarters, a very challenged community. And they made a commitment a few years ago that they were going to stay there. They've been there for well over about 150 years. But they made a commitment that they would stay and keep their corporate headquarters there, and then in 2011 launched their Campbell Healthy Communities work focused on Camden. And they were focused it on childhood obesity and hunger. They have committed resources and some executive leadership to work with a variety of organizations. So it's converted 34 corner stores to provide healthier items and fresh foods. It's worked with the school system. It's supported a soccer program and on and on and on. And it is getting national recognition. They're spreading it to the other places. They've got prominence in their company, but other companies are starting to say, what did you do here? How did you do it? Procter & Gamble in Cincinnati has developed something with the University of Cincinnati and the local school board, as well as the United Way, to say what they call STRIVE, a cradle-to-career partnership there, improving educational outcomes. These are commitments from those companies as good citizens in their communities, that they are there, we are all in this together. And that kind of knitting together the community, community leaders, the corporate leaders, is, we think, crucial for communities to be good places to raise a family, healthful places to raise a family. There are more and more examples of those. We're also hearing of business leaders across the nation coming together concerned about early childhood in an organization called Ready Nation, which is, I think, about 1,000 business leaders saying, as a nation, we've got to invest more in our young young children. And so I think your the leadership and the listenership that we have today can start to make those connections if they haven't and begin to say, what is it that our community needs? What is it that we could do? We know that the United Ways are starting to take this on in a major way. Many corporations, of course, work with the local United Ways. They're using a scorecard that we helped for the health of every county, that measures the health of every county, including some of these like education and employment, to say what should their community work on. The county health rankings, and you can get it at countyhealthrankings.org to see what is the health, what's the health status of your county, and what are the factors that will predict its future health status as places that businesses can contribute.
Great suggestion, Jim. Thank you. That's given people a lot to start with. Appreciate that.
Yeah, and Camden's a very good example. I live and work in Philadelphia and often find my way over there or there. And it is a unique property within Camden itself. And it's almost like a beacon of opportunity in some ways just by its very presence.
Well, and I talked to some of the people there, and they say Camden is starting to turn around, they feel. So they just attracted another business corporate American headquarters to Camden.
Yeah, so I think they're working on that. They're working on improved police and community relations and a lot of other things to turn it around, which is exciting. So we've really come down to the end of our show, and what we always like to do is end the show by asking our guests something where we get to explore with them great ideas that didn't work out. So, Jim, I want to ask you if you can share with us a great idea you had that didn't work out quite as you envisioned and what you learned from that.
Well, I think I've been sharing a little bit of our learnings. We had done community work for many years, and we found that what we could do was too weak in too few communities. It was too scattered to really, around the nation, the numbers we could support, to really help the nation turn around. We have come to realize we need to help the anchor institutions in those communities, the businesses, the health providers, the government, schools, all of those work together and help them see what are the best practices and where success is starting to occur. That's probably our highest and best use as a foundation. And that, we hope, can help our nation move towards a culture of health. That was, I think, a crucial learning that took us a while to get to, but I think we're seeing it, and probably what's so exciting is we're seeing more and more communities get it, more and more businesses get it, more and more nonprofits, United Ways, the Y's are all seeing this, and it's something they can be part of. So when a community comes together, there will be more local leaders ready to work together with the business community and others.
That's a great story, Jim, of trial and error, right? So you finally get to a solution that you think might be the right direction, which is persistent. Dogged persistence is always a good thing. So
We would have preferred to get to it quicker, but as a nation, we have to get to it because right now our health care is becoming an unaffordable set of technologic solutions.
Isn't that well said? And I like technology more than most.
Me too.
But I heartily agree with you. Heartily agree. So thank you so much, Jim. And so for people to remind, this is Jim Marks, who's an executive vice president with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and he was here with us today talking about social determinants of health, or more commonly, where we work live, play, and pray. And I also, of course, want to thank on Fran's behalf our listeners who continue to follow our shows and give us ideas for continuing shows to go on. This theme of financial health has brought us a variety now of approaches to the topic. So thank you, Jim, and thank you to our listeners. We want to, of course, remind people that our next show will air on Wednesday, August 5th at 12 noon Eastern Daylight Time, as it always does, which is the first Wednesday of the month. And, of course, you can listen on demand to today's show as well as all of our shows at any number of places, including the Blog Talk Radio platform, iTunes, and Stitcher. So once again, thank you to Jim Marks, thank you to my co-host Fran, and thank you to the listeners. Have a wonderful
thank
day
you.
And a safe and healthy month.
Thank you.
Bye.